Everything paranormal. Para-X. The views expressed and the opinions given by the individual host and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of Para-X, its affiliates, or its sponsors.
Merry meet, and blessed be, heed the words I call to thee. Honour the old ones in name and deed, hearken not to others' greed. Pray to the moon when she is round, luck with you shall then abound. Respect the earth, the sky, the sea, as you will it, so mote it be. Welcome to Stirring the Cauldron, on the Para-X Radio Network. And now, here's your host, Marla Brooks.
Hey, Merry Meet, everybody, and thanks for joining me again this week. The opening music today was called Ravensville, and ravens are just one of the many beings that people associate with familiars, and that's the subject tonight. We're going to be talking about familiars with my guest, Maja Dioung. I knew I was not going to say it right. Dioung. Maja is also known as the Witch of the Dawn, and I may be referring to her that way the rest of the night. She's a practicing witch and scholar of alchemy and occult lore. And after completing her bachelor's degree in biochemistry, she studied oriental medicine and acupuncture, and later earned her master's degree in transformational psychology with a focus on shamanism, the I Ching, and ancestors. She's the author of A Witch's Bestiary, Visions of Supernatural Creatures, co-author of The Secret Source, and creator of a tarot deck, the White Witch Tarot, that people really seem to love. And tonight, we're talking about her book, Familiars in Witchcraft. So hi, Maja, and thank you for coming in to visit me, and thank you for getting me tongue-tied in the beginning. I loved it.
My pleasure. I'm always here to cause a little ruckus.
Yeah, I know, you know, but a little mischief never hurt anybody. So. Yeah.
Thanks for having me, Marla.
Well, it's a great book and really interesting. And like I told you before the show, I really learned some stuff from it. And I mean, not that I'm a know-it-all or anything, but I was really kind of amazed at what I didn't realize. So
that's impressive to me because you do know a lot. I was looking at some of your material and you're very knowledgeable. So I take that as a high compliment.
Oh, well, thanks. And you know, at first glance, people are going to look at the book and think that it's about animal familiars like black cats or ravens. But the fact is, familiars are so much more complex than that, aren't they?
They really are. And, you know, as most spiritual things go, as you look deeper into them, they kind of unfold into these crazy origami things,
you know,
that really become so much more complex. And even animals themselves, you know, if you spend time with what most people would think are familiar spirits, when you get into it, you're like, wait, there's definitely more going on here than meets the eye. So I really wanted to try to show people some of the full scope, even with animals attributed to a lot of those ways that we get information and data and relationships with the natural world, because I think people kind of think they have an understanding of it and take it for granted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're right. And I think also people think that all witches have familiars, or maybe not all the time, but I'm curious to hear about your experience with them.
Yes, I know, right? Mm-hmm. For me, I did most of my witchiness really came from direct experience in nature. So I was a little nature nerd and hung out a lot in the woods and was obsessed with animals as a young person. While my sisters were watching cartoons, I would be watching all the nature shows. I just couldn't get enough of it. So I really studied about animals a lot and was intrigued by nature all the time. So I really connected to nature early on, I would say, which I think probably happens with a lot of witches. There's that somehow we get bonded to nature in some way. Mm-hmm. And then I think it leaves the door open for that familiar spirit relationship. So as a young girl, I had my cat who was named Boo. She came at Halloween.
Nice.
Very witchy. Yeah. And then really, you know, just realized that animals are very sentient, very conscious through my relationship with her. And then it kind of expanded in my time that I spent in the woods and spent in the forest. And then on more modern times, as I got older and explored consciousness, I discovered that there was a lot of intelligences and entities that were guiding, directing, and exchanging information, not only with myself, but with other people. So I had in my late 30s and early 40s profound experiences through my work with my Native American teacher, having interactions with some of those higher, I guess, I don't know if you want to quantify it with a level, but kind of sentient intelligences of familiar spirits, where I just got information that there was no way I could have known, and then the information was all correct is kind of the best way that I could describe that.
Okay. Well, you know what? The subhead in the book says familiars are supernatural guardians in the magical traditions of the world, and that could be confusing in the sense that in pop culture and in movies, TV, the familiar usually is shown as a cat or a raven, who are flesh and blood creatures rather than supernatural beings as we know it. But familiars, and this is one of the things that kind of explains a little bit, familiars are oftentimes shapeshifters, aren't they?
Yes, in most of the folklore, they are both flesh and blood animals and supernatural. So that is, you're right, very confusing. And a lot of the animal forms that the familiars take have an added supernatural spirit attached to them. So one of my favorites of those is in the Asian and Japanese folklore, they use the foxes. They call them the kitsune, and the foxes are at the same time real living animals that you would be able to see with your eyeballs, but they also have a spirit or sentience with them, which is something other than just a regular fox, right? So in many of the indigenous cultures, there's regular flesh and blood animals, and then there's animals that have achieved or are housing other kind of entities or intelligences. So they're kind of like animals plus.
Well, that's it. And then, but also, I mean, you can call certain animals your familiar because they seem to know more than they look like they do. I mean, I had a bird, for example, just a cockatiel, a regular everyday cockatiel, and he was really too smart for his own good. He was a real brat, and he lived to be 25. So, you know, he was like, okay, I'll show you, you know.
Yeah.
But the thing of it was, I mean, I didn't use him in the familiar context as much as bonding with him, because if there were spirits around in the house or whatever, he was always alert to them. He would always warn about them. He would always...
A true guardian.
Yeah. But, you know, he didn't go out and do my bidding, as people would think, or anything. But, yeah, so there's just, I think there's so many different ways that familiars can impact our lives as guardians, or as, you know, going out and doing the bidding. And we'll talk about that in a little while, too. But they come in different shapes, different forms, different sizes, and for different reasons, I think.
I think so, too. And there's a lot of different expressions of them. You know, like some people think it's very straightforward, but it's very much like I would view it as kind of different species that have different abilities or tasks or functions that they can fulfill. Right. Some of them are literally just kind of your friend or soul companion, just even on that very straightforward level of sharing a relationship with another species, which I think is profound in and of itself, because it reminds us that our relationships to the life on the planet Earth, you know, are more in depth than most people have any knowledge of. That you can come into a relationship and a friendship with any other life form on the Earth is something that people have to really understand and remember, I think.
Yeah, and I'm just looking at the chat room, and Kat in chat said, regular flesh and blood ones don't nearly get the recognition for sentience that they deserve either.
Yes, true.
She says, but some of them are just, no other word, magical.
Very true. Through friendship, you know, the magic of friendship is something special in and of itself. And when you bond with any other thing, you're having like a shared consciousness with another living creature. That opens the space for all kinds of magic. And it doesn't matter if it's a bird or a cat or a bug or, you know, a tree. That is, it's profound when you experience it directly.
Yeah. And allow yourself to open up to it is
yes.
The other part of it. I mean, we can experience it, but a lot of people walk around with blinders on and, you know, asbestos protection. So, you know.
They can't even see that something else is alive, right? They can't feel the life force of another living creature.
Yeah, and that's really, you know, that part of it got to me the other day, because I got really ant infested badly.
And
you know how you get mad and you don't want to kill anything, but sometimes you have to.
It's difficult. Yes.
Yeah.
My status, cockroaches.
Oh God. No, I would. No, that's even worse. But I was so mad. I mean, they were swarming so bad that, you know, one would walk by and I'd stick my finger on it to kill it. But then all of a sudden, at one point, I got the willies. I got kind of the heebie-jeebies, because it was like my mind said, you just killed something.
Yes.
And I'm like, oh, I can't do that again. You know, but it was, it's really weird how you react to things like that, or things that you don't even notice. But yeah, I mean, we as pagans, which is, we don't believe in killing things, you know, unless it's absolutely necessary. And sometimes it is, but I didn't even think about it until,
but then,
you know,
you felt it. You could still feel, you could feel their life force. I know.
I did. You know, you do. And even when they bite you, you still feel it. But yeah, so it's really kind of an interesting thing to, that if you let down your guard, if you're not always worried about letting too much in, you know, then you start seeing more things and feeling more things. And that's good because it just opens you up to more and more, opens your eyes, opens your soul up to more that's out there, not just about killing bugs, but in general.
No, it's that's the thing, right? And what I found was really through my practices that it opened me, right? So I think that when anyone comes into a relationship with a familiar spirit, it's because they got opened in some way, right? Some people, I think, are maybe born with a disposition to it, or they seek it on purpose. You know, they might come into some knowledge and then form a desire. I think some people, their familiar just finds them, and then it's kind of, you know, like how an animal will just move in with you all of a sudden.
Yeah, well.
It's like you don't choose it. But then others, it's really as you open, your awareness grows. And then you can hear or be aware that those sentient beings are there sharing consciousness with you. Whereas someone else who wasn't paying attention, just it would not even come on their radar.
Yeah. And I think it's so important to open up to things like that because it makes, you know, most people live in the black and white world, but I keep saying this over and over again, you have to live in the gray. And the only way you can live in the gray is to open up to it. And there is a world of possibilities there.
It's really, you said that very well. And if you really polarize yourself to some kind of fundamentalist thinking, you're just like missing half of the information that's available, you know?
Mm-hmm. And you know what? We just got a question in chat about, can plants be familiar? And I know that one of my guests a long time ago was talking about plants, the spirits of the plants. Mm-hmm. So, it, you know, right on, if you take that at face value, no, plants can't be familiars, but they do have spirits, according to a lot of people. So can they, do you think?
Yeah, when I talk about in my research in the book that a lot of shamans have plant familiar spirits and they have entire relationships with these plants. And some of them, usually it will be a plant that's medicinal or holds some kind of medicinal value. And the shaman will have such a close relationship with this plant that they are married to it. And they literally call it a marriage. And some of the plant spirits are very jealous and will not permit these shamans to even have like real life girlfriends or relationships with humans because they kind of get hoardy with the person. And this, of course, is talked about a lot in the fairy literature as well. A lot of the fairy literature talks about how plants have spirits, like you mentioned, mm-hmm. and that these spirits of the plants can come into literal relationships with humans. And they do and have. And there's all kinds of documented cases of people coming into these fairy plant relationships. And they call these the fairy brides, too. So they'll literally have marriages. Mm-hmm. And in the Indian literature as well, they talk about how many trees form familiar relationships and guardian relationships with humans where they give them spiritual information. There are some people that think that the Buddha had a type of relationship like that with the Bodhi tree and that mm-hmm. it was actually the tree that gave him the information that he needed that caused him to get the enlightenment.
And the Bodhi tree, as we know, is a tree of enlightenment. And yeah, that makes good sense.
Yeah, so there's lots of stories about it. I mean, who knows, you know, but there's certainly people in multiple cultures talking about it. So I always pay attention to that stuff.
Well, yeah, absolutely. And you were just talking about fairies, and we were talking about shapeshifters a little earlier.
Yes.
But there is a chapter in the book on fairy familiars. And as we all know, the Fae are very good at being shapeshifters. But given the fact that all fairies are not Tinkerbell, that could be a little scary, don't you think?
It does get weird. In a lot of the stories, they don't always have your best interest in mind, right? And yep. They're both helpful and harmful. Like I said, sometimes they get jealous and they will act out and I include in the book, too, some of these familiars are dangerous or violent, and they will have a kind of obsessive compulsive nature. So if we think about the spirits of some of the plants are obsessive and addictive, and people will lose their kind of autonomy to certain plant spirits, you know, or alcohol or different substances. So some of the spirits of these plants are not very helpful at all, but you can still come into a relationship with them. And I think those are more like toxic relationships, kind of the same that we have with some people, you know?
Well, I think all sentient beings, we have the same reactions to whatever they may be. I mean, we're all sentient beings, and so we can relate on those levels, even if it's, you know, a fairy, if it's a whatever. We're all the same, basically.
It's so true. Yeah.
Yeah.
And all those kind of relationships we form are similar. You know, we come into these weird pattern dynamics with different kinds of flavors of things, and those mirror other ways that humans relate to each other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's, I mean, the whole concept, you know, when you start reading this book, it opens up your mind to a lot of different questions. I mean, I was thinking, oh, am I going to have enough questions to ask about this? And every time I read something, oh, I had to write it down, you know, just because there's so much there. And one of the things that was really interesting to read was the etymology of the word familiar. And usually translated, like, well, from the Latin, you know, it means servant, which goes along well with how most people look at familiars as one who goes around doing the witch's bidding. And you mentioned Dobby the house elf in Harry Potter as a good example. He was, you know, he would do all the bidding, and he was magical and all that. But the relationship between us and our familiars is, like we were talking about earlier, so much more complex than master and slave. And I would hate to think that a familiar would feel enslaved by me. I wouldn't want to be a master. I would rather want to be the partner.
Well, that's because you're cool.
Okay.
We're talking about us, but not everyone is so nice, right? If you look through the literature, the sad reality of many of these stories is that humans would kind of entrap these spirits and make them do their dirty work. This is sadly a very common story. If you read stories of King Solomon, even though in Judaism using familiar spirits was absolutely forbidden and taboo, which I talk about, King Solomon used familiar spirits to build the temple. So there's many stories in the Apocrypha where he forced these spirits to do labor and to do his work, and then was, you know, kind of like a jerk to them and dominated them. And that is a very common story. If you look in the Arab material, too, you read about the genies who were for these people's bidding and kind of kept enslaved as these servants, which I agree with you. I would never want that. And I think it's kind of weird because there's like a certain type of magic practitioner that utilizes the familiars in this way, in this very dominating way. It's a very kind of patriarchal way to use the spirits.
Yeah, and I wouldn't trust for a minute that if I were using them as slaves and just being disrespectful and all that, that they wouldn't come down and try and kill me in the middle of the night. You know, you just don't know. You have to respect whoever you're dealing with, and otherwise people turn on you, and that goes for sentient beings of all kinds.
It's really happens in the stories too. And King Solomon was torn apart by his familiars, and they rebelled against him due to the poor treatment. And that's, I feel like, I don't know how long it's going to take for people to learn these lessons. So, like, you know, when you treat things badly, it doesn't go well. I don't know, like, why we can't learn to apply this on larger levels, but it's the same with the familiar. So it's really the kind of relationship that you can develop with them is, you know, dependent on you as an individual and what your nature is. So people have certainly used them for good or ill, but most of the stories of the witches, they have a loving, very family-oriented relationship. So it becomes like, you know, like a friend or a sibling or an exchange. Most of the time, in many of the more female-oriented stories, the witches would feed the familiars and give them food and give them offerings. So a lot of times, the tradition of giving offerings to the spirits was how we come into relationship with these familiars. You give offerings to your ancestors. You give sacrificial offerings, which is a big tradition in pagan and witch lore, but not so much in other religions. They just take, they don't give the offering.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's so many things I'm trying to get at and put in perspective here so we don't run out of time. But yeah. One of the things is that you dedicated your book to your familiar guardian spirit, Dr. Kevin DeWolf. Now, some people believe guardian spirits to be angels. Others believe them to be friends or relatives on the other side. But people may not have heard of guardian spirits being familiars. So can you do a little bit of explaining about that?
Yes, absolutely. In my experience, it's very literal. Like a guardian angel, it really is something that has your back in a supernatural way. I've had experiences where it will literally prevent harm from falling on you. I've personally experienced that. And then in a lot of the indigenous stories, it talks about that more. So these are more the totems. In the Native American families, each family has a totem, which has their representatives. And these totem poles, you've probably seen, they'll have combinations of animals, but then also things that are not in the animal kingdom. And there are these weird kind of beings, right? They're not any kind of animal. They're some kind of weird spiritual creature. And these beings on the totems guard the family in a very literal fashion, almost like a dog at your door. So they provide a service of keeping away, you know, bad energy or preventing harm from coming to you. And this concept of a guardian spirit is very worldwide. In China, many of the families have as their familiar spirit, which acts as their guardian, and this goes back through their ancestors, a dragon, for example. So the habit of using a dragon as a guardian spirit of not just yourself, but kind of your whole family lineage, they'll have very specific, identifiable and named dragons, too, for each family. And it is a palpable energy that provides protection for the family.
Mm-hmm. And that's kind of, it makes you feel good to know that that's possible, because we all need a little help. I mean, I know, you know, we all put protection around us sometimes for various reasons. If you're home alone and you're kind of creepy, and I've been known to march, you know, putting out the barrier, but calling for some kind of guardian spirit to kind of march around the house and patrol, you know, just because it makes me feel better and that it could probably happen. And then I said, well, you know, and you have my permission to scare the bejesus out of anybody that tries to break in. Just yes. Don't kill them. Just scare them away. We're good. You know? And I mean, yeah, we do that. And it really makes you feel better about things, honestly.
It does. Well, and you know, witches, of course, use all kinds of wards and hexes. If you go on the East Coast, you'll still see on the barns a lot of times those big hexes, which were only for protection. And in all of the kind of high magic books that you might read, if it's like Hermetic magic or Jewish magic or some of the alchemical magic, the wards and sigils for protection, there's so many of them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in Christianity, people use angels for that purpose. They, right, Michael is the protective angel. And so it's a concept that is really widely talked about in nearly every religion, but people don't consider those with familiar spirits, I think. But I believe they are the same thing.
Okay, good. Well, on that note, we're going to take a break for like 2 minutes. And when we come back, I've got a whole lot more brain picking to do. So everybody hang tight and we'll be back really quick.
Stirring the Cauldron will be right back. So don't go away.
If you end up with webbed feet,
remember, you've been warned. Missed an episode of Stirring the Cauldron? Then be sure to check out MarlaBrooks.com and check out the archive. And while you're there, check out Marla's weekly Witch's Oracle card reading. Explore the site to find many great resources, such as information on tarot, oracle readings, metaphysical consultations, and links to all of Marla's books. That's MarlaBrooks.com.
Almost two decades, Midnight Syndicate has composed the soundtrack to your darkest nightmares. The imaginations of fans worldwide have been fueled by its gothic, horror, and fantasy symphonic albums. A staple of the haunted house and amusement park industry, for many, the music of Midnight Syndicate is the music of Halloween. Now, Midnight Syndicate will bring your nightmares to life in a spectacle of sound from beyond the grave.
From Haunted Road Media comes an exciting new novel by author Marla Brooks, Soul Connection, A Deadly Obsession. Two lost souls, ripped apart by murder in another century, find each other again in the present, only to discover that the murderer has followed them through time. Can their love save them, or will history repeat itself? Find out in this captivating new novel by Marla Brooks, Soul Connection, A Deadly Obsession. Available now on Amazon.com and at BarnesandNoble.com.
Welcome back to Stirring the Cauldron. Once again, here's your host, Marla Brooks.
And he said, welcome back for me, so I don't need to say it, but we're here with Maja, and we're talking about her book, Familiars in Witchcraft, and familiars in general. And during the break, I got a question from the chat room. He wants to know, does everybody, not just witches, have a familiar guardian spirit and maybe not know it? And how would we find out?
That's a great question. Yeah, I, in the book, mention witches aren't the only ones who come to find these spirits. Like I said, many indigenous cultures talk about them profusely, and also individuals throughout history have mentioned it. For example, one of the most famous ones was Socrates. Socrates had his, which he called a daemon, which is actually where they get the word demon. But his daemon was very much a guardian who, Socrates said, whenever he was in danger, his daemon would literally say, like, look out. And he would hear an audible voice that was there guiding him and directing him. And he was very vocal about telling people about this familiar spirit that he worked with very closely. The way that you come into contact with the familiar, and Socrates stated, as well as many others specifically about the guardian spirit, some have said that each individual is born with their attending spirit that never leaves them throughout their whole life. You have this kind of bond with a sentience that follows and guides you, whether or not you know it's there. So it never ditches you. It's not like a bad friend or, you know, a bad marriage partner. This one is down for the long haul. And the methods of coming into contact with your familiar are kind of difficult. So this is why I feel like a lot of people will never, if it doesn't naturally happen to them, they won't quite get there. For me, it was very difficult. And some of the older ways mirror it, but you have to kind of fast and go on a vision quest, which is a big deal and takes commitment and effort. So I mention it, but if you even go online for some of the information, they'll mention some of these vision quests that most folks use, and they usually do involve, you know, sensory deprivation, fasting, because you have to come out of your senses a bit to be able to perceive it there. For some people, it happens when you have, you know, a health incident. You'll start to come into awareness of it, or a usually some kind of break with your regular reality, right? So it can be doing through creative things. Some people come in contact through music. So a lot of musicians, as through their practice of their music, they start to kind of connect with their muse, right? Their guiding informant. And so through doing a lot of creative activity, it'll come through. I myself do a lot of art and practice art kind of obsessively. So if you don't want to go too crazy and too extreme, I would recommend some kind of creative practice.
Mm-hmm. Question from the chat room. So what happens to those guardians for those newborns who don't make it or just are born into horrible families?
I know it's always that the problem of pain question, right? If we do get protection, why is there pain and damage, right? There is different answers to that I've read, not just from my person, but I liked something that I read in the Zohar, which is a book in the Kabbalah and Judaism, and they say that the path of that spirit was that it was nearly complete on its journey, and it actually had incarnated just to teach the parents something. Mm-hmm. So it was actually a blessing to the spirit to be released. But it's hard to say because we don't have that perspective. All we have the perspective is the loss or the suffering, right? But there's usually things behind the story that we don't have access to, that we, you know, we don't know why would the purpose be, but it's about understanding that there is some purpose behind even those seeming tragedies. But I have also myself experienced going through some of those terrible things and losses of babies with friends or clients, and incredibly magical things happened through the course of it that showed that there was a purpose and spirit present while it happened, and also afterwards. Even familiar spirits, there was one where we went for the funeral, and it was to do it in the ocean. And when we placed the baby in the ocean, the remains, the ashes, a seal showed up in front of us. Like, it was outrageous. We placed the ashes into the water, and a giant seal popped its head out of the water and stared at us. It didn't move. We all stood there. We couldn't even take a breath. We were all like frozen. And this seal stayed with us the entire time, followed us when we left, and it was right there sitting with us through the entire course of the thing. So I don't think that the spirits leave during those moments. I think they're present through the whole thing. We just don't understand what's happening.
No, and animals are so much more capable of that than human beings to begin with. I mean, they pick up on so much more. So much easier to them. It's second nature. Some people have to struggle if they want to try and get that going. So
it's so hard because the pain of loss, you know?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, there's so many things that are unexplainable, but I think we're making inroads as we go, just chipping away at things a little bit more at a time, like spirits, like ghosts, like, you know, all this stuff. As time goes on, we're making progress. It may be really prehistoric progress, but but we are. I mean, you know, just like chick, 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 like one grain of sand at a time in the ocean. Yeah.
Through sharing our experiences with each other, we kind of start to piece it together like a puzzle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we try, and sometimes it even works. And we were talking a little bit about, because I'm jumping around again, we were talking a little bit about not all familiars being wonderful, gentle, caring beings. There are some that we wouldn't want to have around us, like perhaps an incubus or a succubus. And you talk about that in the book. And some people will not think of those as familiars, but in reading the chapter about it, boy, there's a whole lot of layers in that too. You know, we just think that they're just nasty, you know, perverted creatures. But there's a whole lot more that you've written about them, huh?
Yeah, there's a lot of human beings that have done terrible things, but that were like great in terms of their scale, like huge, like how could a human being even do that, right? So think about Genghis Khan, for example. So he was known to be a magician. If you read about Genghis Khan in some of the Mongolian literature, he was a hero and a king and a spiritual master and a shaman. And he was known to have an intending spirit as well. So some of these spirits are very attracted to power and they want to kind of be along for a ride of that, or even use your vessel to get those kind of power needs met. So I feel like some of the incubus and succubus stories, they're almost like having a relationship with you to get that energy, right? So they're the exchange in that case is an energetic exchange, just like in the more positive ones, but it takes on a bit of a definitely more strange and terrible nature. And I think if you can see some of the individuals who have participated in those and the things they do, at least on the scale that it's accomplished, is like, it's supernatural, really. Like, if you look at how some of these things occurred, you're like, how did a human being even get to this terrible level, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, it's often very amazing. And all right, now let's suppose that we're aware of our familiar guardians. And sometimes we choose them. Sometimes they choose us. And in the case where they sometimes choose us, suppose we get an uninvited guest that isn't a perfect fit. Are we able to dismiss them without any problems? And
well,
how?
This is a great question too, right? How do you get rid of
one? Yeah.
The families in Ireland who tried to get rid of unwanted fairies, there's many, many different ways that they came up with to kind of rid yourself of these unwanted ones, right? So that became a whole tradition in and of itself. And there was even people that you could hire to clear them away from you. Really, any kind of basic clearing will do the trick. For some of you, if you're aware, most witches know about clearings because you have to clear your energy constantly, especially if you do any healings or services or practices. You need to do clearings, which mostly can be as simple as a salt water bath. So some of the ways are not very complex at all. But if you research in magic, ways to rid yourself of these entities are many, and they're in all the magic books. The Solomonic magic books, the ones from MacGregor Mathers, for example, from the Golden Dawn, have a lot of banishing entities ones. So for that, you would really want to look into clearings and banishings.
Yeah, and hope there's no repercussions, because that's, you know, that's what I would be doing. I'd be looking over my shoulder all the time. It's just like,
Well, it's like if you have a stalker, you know, it would be like a similar type of energy.
Yeah, that's true. And so there are ways. I mean, you can never, if you know the right path, you can get rid of the unwanted in general.
That's right. It's hard though. You know, you get links with negative energy, and that happens. You know, it might be in your family. You might have a family member that has that you're tied to in some way, and that negative energy is just on you, and you have to be like responsible for it. Or, you know, things like this happen to individuals all the time. You get kind of roped into these shenanigans, you know?
Yeah, that's where you jump and do hopscotch along the line so you don't fall and break your back in a crack or something. I don't know. So witches aren't the only ones that are connected to familiars. And in the book, you go global, actually, and you address folklore throughout Europe and America, as well as in the shamanic and magical traditions around the world, including Africa and India and China. Lots of good chapters in the book. There's also a very interesting chapter on familiar spirits in Judeo-Christianity, which I think would make a really good show all of its own. So we might want to talk about that down the line. But do you think there's any culture that does not have familiars in some shape or form?
Well, I was really looking everywhere to see if there was any that didn't include it. And I just kept finding them everywhere. You know, one of the reasons I really wanted to make the book was to say, look at all of this. It's crazy. It's all these cultures have references to them and they would use them. And if you don't see it, and many of them would have it in modern practices and they would be included in the modern theologies and the more modern religions, not just the ancient. You know, people might think this is something that's reserved for, you know, more primitive practices. Although I think most of the primitive practices are much more like certainly human than a lot of our modern practices. Mm-hmm. I kind of hate that word, but you know, and they think it only belongs there. But if you look into all of the different mythologies, you'll see sooner or later that someone's consulting a supernatural spirit. And that's happening everywhere that I looked. I couldn't find anywhere that didn't have them.
Well, and I think any culture that does any kind of divination of, at all is doing that very thing. You know, somebody might be picking up a pendulum. Well, who's on the other side of the pendulum? Or somebody's doing a Ouija board, or somebody's doing even bibliomancy. You know, where does your finger go? Did you put it there? Did somebody help you put it there to get the message? So
that
I think
correct. All divination is tied to demonic practices, right? Familiar spirit practices. So if they're using divination, they're using familiars.
So they can't, there's no way that there probably isn't in any culture, any belief system. They're always going to be there. Exactly.
Yeah.
So how can forming a connection with living forces and other than humans expand our magical abilities or even evolve our conscious awareness?
I am really a big proponent that they have evolved our consciousness. And through my research, it looks to me like the majority of leaps in human civilization came through humans forming these relationships. If you look at the literature that talks about how languages came to human beings, in nearly every creation myth of languages, it came through an exchange with a sentient supernatural creature. It's angels that give it to the Hebrew people, that tell them how to do agriculture, that give them like exchange all this information. You can look at every single civilization if they have knowledge of music, have knowledge of language, have knowledge of agriculture, have knowledge of weaponry. These things all come from familiar spirits. So it seems to me like we wouldn't have much civilization if people hadn't come into these strange relationships and exchanged information.
Mm-hmm. And might not have even thought twice about it being something a little different or strange or odd, you know. I think we're much more suspicious in this day and age than people were before. And
yes,
a lot of people take things, well, they did take things at face value. Now we go niggling around trying to see what the loophole is. You know, we just can't accept what it is, what it is. And so, yeah, it makes a kind of difference between then and now. But I'm sure they were way more open than we were.
I agree. I think it has, you know, there's probably a lot of explanations, but that openness, I think, was even on a belief level where they didn't really think they knew the answer. So they were more open. I think nowadays we think we know. I think that might be the biggest block is our hubris has grown tremendously.
Yeah. Yeah, such a change, so many years. Another question from the chat room, can the degree to which you love an animal turn it into a familiar?
Oh, that's so cute. Well, it's true. And for an example, to answer that, you know, in my work with death and ancestors, and kind of this medium that I met that was amazing, most of the mediums, to my knowledge, become able to form that connection because they lose a loved one or someone that they love so intensely. Like when you really truly love something, that connection is so strong It's stronger than death. It will remain through death. It's stronger than, you know, language barriers. It's stronger than speciation. A true bond of love, that connection that forms, I mean, I got to say, that is the source of power. So if you really love something, your family to that thing, it is familiar to you because you know each other. You feel each other. You understand each other.
Good answer. Okay. One more thing I want to get into before we run out of time. You write about soulmates in the book, and reading about soulmates in particular, there is so much more to a soulmate than someone you meet, fall in love with, and live happily ever after. I think people are just under that misconception. So let's take a couple of minutes and delve into that. Okay.
Yes. I wish people would expand their notion of soulmate. I think it kind of damages a lot of women, especially because of the cultural view of that word. And then they feel like if they don't have that perfect partner, that they're somehow, you know, there's something wrong with them or they're not living a full life. But your soulmate can be, there's a lot of things in this world that have kind of like correspondences or signatures. And when you find something that has your same kind of signature, it's like a song that you love that just hits you in the right place, you know? That's a soul connection. So I feel like there's multiple things that are your soulmates. I don't know that there's only one, but then you have a spirit soulmate, that guardian spirit, like I mentioned, that's with you your whole life that never leaves. So you automatically come in with one, and then I feel like you can make soul connections to anything that kind of has that same frequency as you. And those can be friends or, you know, like I said, a song or just a moment in time or a feeling. It can be kind of abstract, but it can also take the form of these spirits that will also have that same kind of feeling, or animals, certainly. You can have a soulmate take the form of an animal. I believe that 100%.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and as you said, sometimes trees, as you said earlier, trees and plants or something. It's just that very strong affinity, and maybe I'm making this too easy, but a very strong affinity to something, you can consider that something being your soulmate.
Affinity is the exact word. You're exactly correct.
Okay. Yeah, because, you know, most people go, oh, I'm looking for my soulmate. Well, you've probably got a few that you know about, but you don't realize that they're soulmates because you're looking for love.
You know, and silly.
You know, I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. But, and then in the chat room, they're talking about the difference between twin flames and soulmates. Yeah. And I, there is a difference. So, you know, it's all really put together really interestingly. But boy, so much of this is in the book, and people need to read this book, because it just really is very eye-opening. And there is just so much more to talk about, but as usual, there's not enough time. And unusual. Yeah, there's not enough time to get to it all. So before we do run out, if we get carried away, I want you to tell people where they can find out more about you, not just this book, but all your books. And you also have a long list of services on your website that people could take advantage of, like astrology readings, tarot and I Ching readings, herbal remedies, consultations, altar work, all kinds of goodies.
Oh, yeah. I'm very busy bee. that's all. You can find it on witchofthedawn.com. And then, of course, I post all my stuff on social media. I do offer lots of services for folks. And then I try to put a lot of information for free available as well. I have a YouTube channel where I give all kinds of free talks and try to list access to information through my nonprofit that I do lectures with as well. So for folks that are just trying to learn on a budget, I try to get that info out to y'all as well.
Yeah, there's just so many things to cover. And you are on Facebook, yes?
Yes, absolutely.
So people can find you in a lot of places. I'm sure if they Google Google you and spell your spell your whole name for them, because people that are listening to the podcast can see it, but people that aren't might want to look you up and need to know how.
Oh, sure. It's a weird one. It's M-A-J-A, Maja, and then my last name is French-Canadian, which is Daou, and that's D-A-O-U-S-T.
Yeah, and that's why I didn't get it. But, you know, but it would be worse if, you know, because people sometimes they misspell or mispronounce something, and they just honor it, you know, that they're right, and nobody else can tell them otherwise, you know.
I mean, people are stubborn, they're funny.
I know, and I just kind of come tiptoeing in and say, please, and then I probably won't get it right the next time either if it's, you know, really tough. So,
yeah. I just call everyone dude and leave it at that.
Well, dude is good, it's easy enough. I really think anybody that wants to kind of open their mind and make themselves think, and this book isn't a difficult book to read. It's not a textbook. I keep saying that because the people that I have on the show that write books, write really good books, interesting books, easy to read books, but jam packed with a ton and tons and tons of information. So, you know, take a look, you know, go over to Amazon, take a peek, you know, they'll probably have an excerpt there or something, but, I said, we talked about earlier, I learned a lot myself, and that's not hard to do, but I mean, I have a whole lot to learn, but still, you know, things that you kind of think that you know, all of a sudden you realize that you only know just the surface of it, so going a little bit deeper is better. So I want to thank you for sharing your book with us tonight and your knowledge. And please come back. And I really kind of do want to talk about that Judeo-Christianity chapter because it may be a little bit controversial in a sense.
Yes. Depending.
But it's really, really interesting at the same time. So we'll talk about doing that. And
I'd love to anytime.
Thank you. And I also want to thank everyone for listening in, whether you're live or you're listening on the podcast, and hopefully you're live then too. And until next time, everybody, blessed be and merry meet again. Good night.
Thank you for tuning into this episode of Stirring the Cauldron with Marla Brooks. Please join us again next week at the same time for another great guest and more cauldron stirring. Any rebroadcast or other use of this program without explicit permission is strictly prohibited. Copyright 2019. The Mysterioso March by Kevin MacLeod is licensed through Incompotech.com.